This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to www.accessradiotaranaki.com.
Time now to meet at the stage door, your weekly recap on all things theatre here in Taranaki. Thanks to the wonderful team at Being Seen Media. Let's meet now at the stage door. Good evening and welcome to the stage door this evening. Well, today we are talking about Q Theatre's latest production of The Cottage by Sandy Rustin, which opened last Wednesday night to plenty of laughter, lots of chaos and lots of classic farcical fun. Now, if you enjoy British comedy, that's very witty, there's lots of door slamming, lots of misunderstandings, romantic disasters and basically complete theatrical mayhem, this is very much a show for you. The Cottage is a modern play written by American playwright Sandy Rustin, draws heavily on that influence of Noel Coward, Oscar Wilde almost, Stephen, wonderful exaggerated English comedies of manners, and you know, it's poking fun at the social classes. Now, The Cottage is set in the English countryside in the 1920s, and it centres around the character of Sylvia Van Kipnis, who arrives at a countryside cottage, planning to finally reveal her long-running affair to her husband and to her lover's wife. So you can imagine quite quickly that things are going to unravel quite comically. And what starts as a carefully planned confession, it soon turns into a real whirlwind of secrets, surprise arrival, mistaken identities, mistaken intentions, romantic confusion and escalating absurdity. Now, every character in The Cottage seems to bring another layer of chaos with them, and the audience is taken along for the ride, and gosh, it's a very entertaining one. Genre-wise, this play firmly sits in the realm of what I call screwball comedy and farce. It's almost verging on black comedy, poking fun at the elephant in the room, poking fun at the social classes. It's fast-paced, it's over-the-top in all those best ways, packed with rapid-fire dialogue, physical comedy, larger-than-life personalities, all those things that we love in a good British farce. There's also a bit of a contemporary edge beneath the period setting and the way it examines marriage and relationships and also social expectations. Opening night nerves of the show that I saw last Wednesday night were certainly present for the first few moments, as they often are, as we know, but the cast quickly settled into a rhythm. It was great. There was only one slight technical note at the very beginning that I thought, oh, I'll just bring down the music a little bit. There was a first few moments of dialogue in the first 5 minutes where a lovely version of Let's Make Whoopee is being played, but at times it definitely overshadowed the dialogue that was being delivered, made it quite hard to hear them at times. There was also one moment where clearly there were audience members who were family and friends of people on stage, and just a reminder to actors that unless it's intended to not react to that, because at the very beginning there was certainly a very obvious reaction to the cheering and the caterwauling, as it were. Sharon Reed as a director, I believe, deserves enormous credit for this show. It's steering this production to a very, very, very successful one. Comedy like this is all about timing, the fast pace, the movement, and Sharon Reed has done an amazing job with this. It really is. Blocking was very clever. The use of the space, the stage, it was really thoughtful, insightful, really dynamic, and escalating chaos never became confusing for the audience at all. It was lovely. Now the set, wowza, 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 and the decor, wowza. Huge congratulations and kudos to them, because it is a beautiful set and decorated beautifully. The 1920s English countryside cottage is just absolutely what you see as soon as those curtains open. The visual world of the play felt really authentic. It was very polished. Costuming was outstanding. And attention to detail in this was everywhere, right down to lined stockings and suspenders for the female roles. Again, if there was a slight criticism, and that was 1923, there wasn't tattoos around. And so I thought at one stage, I thought, oh, if she'd only worn a long sleeve negligee, which would have covered them up. Not that I have a problem with tattoos, because I don't, because I've got them. But if we're sticking with 1923, which is about, and realistically speaking, about poking fun at the way people behave there and so forth, maybe she could have worn a long sleeve negligee for that. Performance-wise, there were some real standouts in the show, and for me, if it was an Oscar and I was giving it to someone, it would have to go to Lydia Marston as Deirdre. Or Deirdre, she just stole the scenes. She was phenomenal. Her performance was really precise. She was vocally such strong, very, very, very expressive performer. I'm a person who likes to go and see reactions. They may not have the centre of attention, but her reactions to the outrageous situations that were unfolding around her were often just as funny as the dialogue that was being shared. And some of the biggest laughs of the night came, of course, when she was drunk, in the placement of some very unfortunate objects, shall I say, around the cottage around her to cover her up. It was hilarious. I mean, I just absolutely cracked up, and it takes a bit to get me really laughing out loud, but it was very, very, very funny. Her facial expressions, her body language, she was outstanding. Definitely the standout for me, and that was Lydia Marston as Deirdre. Lisa Bayan as Sylvia brought exactly the right amount of confidence to this role. It was sophisticated, she had energy, she certainly walked with a lovely bounce and vitality in her. At times I thought it almost may have gone a little bit too far with that. However, she was so convincing, a brilliant, brilliant portrayal of Sylvia. Nathan Erawata played the charming Philanderer Beau with confidence and charisma. He's certainly gorgeous to watch on stage because he just holds the room, and that's a lovely thing for a man to have. The script leans obviously to the charm of that role, and his, you know, his swagger and his philandering and his good looks sweeping across many a swooning woman. And you know, like I must admit, in my written review, I've written on that you know, not only did he have a few women dropping down with swoons, they also probably dropped their knickers as well, to be quite honest. He embraced the role. Well done to Nathan. It was beautiful. Gorgeous one. Chris Morrison as Clark, which is Beau's brother in the show. He was very dapper, very well assured. You couldn't help but think he was, you know, definitely the older brother of the two, but he brought this, you know, slightly more reserved dynamic to the mix. Alongside him, we had newcomer Caitlin Bingham as Marjorie, and she was delightful as the pregnant wife. She brought warmth, there was a bit of sarcasm, sweetness, lovely comedic moments for her as well. Sean Stanley plays Richard. He was soundly cast, giving some more absurd moments with a strong and believable performance. Definitely the other one I thought was quite clever at the very end was the gardener appeared at the very end, and you couldn't help but have a bit of a chuckle, which ended the show with one final laughing moment. The other thing I really liked about this is that the play is set just in two acts. So there are no scene changes in Act 1 and none in Act 2. So it's just a static set, static scene, just flows on from one to the other. And that is brilliant. It's lovely to watch. The other thing that came quite apparent throughout the evening performance that I saw was that is how brilliant the script is. Because the script is brilliant. Because underneath all this ridiculousness and chaos sits some really smart commentary around relationships, expectations, identity, obviously the difference in social classes, the way things were looked at in the 1920s, because you almost could think a bit Downton Abbey versus, you know, like there's moments of it which are, you know, like Downton's been such a successful series, but you couldn't help but laugh at some of the moments of Downton with that social representation. And that's like that in the show, but poking fun at it even more so. If there is any major criticism, I don't think there was any, but there is one small criticism that I have, because it can't be me without having some, and that was how much I felt that the cast would have benefited hugely from having a diction and an accent coach to lead them along. Attempting accents is something that, unless you do it 100% and have it absolutely secure, I don't personally like it. However, this was a play that relied on that diction, it relied on that accent. It pokes fun at the prim and proper, plum in your mouth, and they just didn't sustain it. And that was my only disappointment, really, was that how much it could have really brought an extra level and something that would have just made the humour come out even more, because it relies so much on rhythm and language. And thus, I thought, yeah, definitely a dialogue or an accent coach or a voice coach would have really, really, really helped them, and somebody who obviously could support them through that process. It didn't distract, though. I've got to say that. It did not distract from an incredibly enjoyable evening of theatre. The Cottage at Kew Theatre is energetic, it's stylish, it's witty, it's genuinely funny. They should be congratulated, cast and crew, and really proud of what they've achieved. It's a real reminder of what incredible talent we've got here in Taranaki, because we have got great talent. And of course, the quality of productions local audience can get to see that are affordable is certainly out there. And well done to the cast. Well done, guys. It was brilliant. Well done to you, Sharon. And yeah, really, really, really good show. Go and see it. If you haven't booked your tickets, make sure you go and see The Cottage at Kew Theatre, because it's definitely worth seeing. Right, I'm about to start directing The Vagina Monologues, which is a play written by Eve Ensler. It's one of the most influential plays of the 1990s, and I'm staging it at New Plymouth Little Theatre this August. So I wanted to give us a bit of a background, because a lot of people go, they hear the word vagina monologues and they just can't get past the word vagina. And it's not a comedy, you need to know that. It's a play that has every emotion known to womankind, basically, in it. Now, the play was first performed in 1996, and it began as a series of interviews by American playwright, activist, author Eve Ensler. Now, she spoke with more than 200 women from a wide range of ages, cultures, backgrounds, and life experiences, who started conversations about women's bodies and quickly became a much deeper conversation. It explored identity, relationships, violence, shame, empowerment, sexuality, survival, and even joy, of course. Now, Eve Ensler once was quoted as saying that she wrote the play and was inspired to write the play because she noticed how uncomfortable society was about discussing women's bodies openly. And even saying the word, like I said, vagina, could make people quite uneasy. Obviously, we have the Hardy Breakfast, and I've got Brian Vickery hosting with me, and he has said to me, won't say the word menopause, you know. Well, how on earth is somebody like that going to cope with the word vagina? She wanted it, when Eve Ensler wrote it, she wanted to really challenge people on how we could have honest conversations that were respectful, but the truth could be spoken. And the result of that was a groundbreaking collection of monologues. Now, some are funny, some are heartbreaking, some are very, very, very confronting, and some are deeply moving. It's rather than, it doesn't follow a storyline as such. It doesn't go from one plot and a set of characters. The play is made up of all of these individual pieces, each representing different voices and different experiences, and that's something which is quite different. Now, some of the monologues, as I say, are light-hearted and humorous. They explore things like first sexual experiences, relationships, ageing, childbirth, body image, and others deal with very serious topics: sexual violence, trauma, domestic abuse, genital mutilation, and experiences of women living in war zones even. Now, one of the reasons The Vagina Monologues has become so powerful internationally is because audience recognised themselves or the people around them within these stories. And that's the powerful thing about it. It gives voice to experiences many people have never heard or spoken about publicly before. Opens the box. Pandora's box is absolutely open. Now, the original performances featured Eve Ensler herself, actually, in a one-woman show, and often she would have guest performers come in and do the things. Now, over the years, the show's transformed quite a lot. It's been performed in over 140 countries, translated into dozens and dozens of languages. It's featured actors, musicians, activists, community performers from all sorts of walks of life. It's shown and demonstrated people of all races. It's shown people of all different abilities, been fully inclusive, exploring a woman's identity on every level imaginable. The play, which I think is really important, one of the things about it is it's not about one single type of woman, because obviously we're not. It includes stories from younger women, from older women, from mothers, daughters, survivors, professionals, people discovering their sexuality, people navigating cultural experiences. It really shows the diversity of society and the complexity of women's experiences. It actually became, which is interesting, became a foundation of a global movement known as V-Day. And it's a movement called to help end violence against women and girls. And productions around the world have often been used as fundraising events for local organisations, shelters, advocacy groups. And that's one of the things that we've got a special night planned to do something with Taranaki Women's Refuge for this play. And I guess one of the other things about it which makes it stand out is its honesty. Theatre has really, really explored intimate experiences in such a direct and unapologetic way. You look at plays like Prima Facie, that's one that certainly brings it out to the forefront. You know, you think about plays, you know, look at things like Foreskin's Lament, which is about women, men at least, and, you know, and you, there's not many plays that really just explore sexuality like this, and Vagina Monologues is one, obviously, that does. Some audience will embrace the show. Some audience members will be horrified. Some will find it fiercely controversial. It's a play that will get people talking, and that's what, in my opinion, theatre should be about. Whether people love it or whether people like it, whether they're challenged by it, or whether it sparks conversation is what we're wanting, because that's exactly the intention of a play like The Vagina Monologues. Now, over the time, plays evolve, and this is a play that has evolved over the years. It has reflected change in society, replaced certain things. Monologues have been replaced to challenge conversations around gender, for example, identity, inclusion. And in more recent years, plays have even gone into broaden that representation, acknowledge experiences beyond a strictly binary view of gender. The other thing that's done too, the Me Too movement, that's another thing that has had, the people have had a look at. From a theatre perspective, I guess you could say The Vagina Monologues is rather unique, really, because it relies heavily on storytelling and performance rather than sets or action. There is no set. The strength of the piece comes from words, it comes from the honesty, and it comes from the connection between performer and the audience, which is what leads me to the next little inside scoop, and that is this is a play that will be performed in the round. And what it means is for those of you who go to New Plymouth Little Theatre regularly, you will see the balustrades that are along there from the bottom piece that's there, and as it drops down to the front bit right in front of the stage, the apron there. Well, that's actually going to have a catwalk, as it were, built out from there. So the audience will be able to be around each side of them. Obviously, the stage will still be used, but there'll be an area where they'll be able to actually be right out amongst and be with the audience. The other thing that the strength of this play is, as I say, you know, it shows that vulnerability, the courage and authenticity from the cast. It's a play where you have to be real. You can't look at it as a cast member and put on a performance, because it will not work. Peeling the layers off is a term that I use. And in fact, I was talking to one of the cast members the other day at another play. Actually, it was at the Cottage, funnily enough. And we were talking about things like diction and so forth. And I was talking about how I really loved The Cottage, but it just would have really helped if the diction in there, if they'd had a vocal coach to work on accents and so forth. And she said to me, oh gosh, does that mean you're going to be focused on diction? And I said, no, but in a play like The Cottage, it relied on that. But in something like The Vagina Monologues, it needs to be truthful. And there's a great technique called the fridge technique I was taught at drama school, and it's a really good technique to have as an actor, and that is you basically, in life, you store all these different emotions and different beliefs and different experiences that you have. And when you're acting a role, you may not necessarily have had that first-hand experience to be completely truthful about it, because you don't know, right? You only know what you know. But you can draw on a similar experience by opening your fridge door, as it were, and store all these different experiences in your fridge, which is your soul, and you can open the drawer and draw on them. That's a really nice way, an analogy of being able to look at it. A lot of the actors in the show, when they've have done Vagina Monologues, have said that the work has been transformative, that they've found the emotional openness and trust has been invigorating, but it also has really created strong bonds between performers and audiences, because the whole Me Too, I guess you could say, or I know someone, or this has happened, or whatever. Community theatres around the world have often said that the production becomes more than just a show, and I guess this is something that I really want to have, because, again, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, theatre should be a conversation starter. It should be a sharing of experiences. It should get you thinking, and that's something that I really hope that The Vagina Monologues does. Nearly 30 years since it premiered, isn't that just crazy? Because I can remember when it first ever came out, and it was such a huge thing. It's still regarded as one of the most recognised contemporary theatre works in the world. How amazing is that? And we get to see it here in Taranaki. Some people see it as empowering. Some people see it as provocative. Some see it as an important social document of its time. But few would argue that it's failed to leave an impact. At its core, the play asks audiences to listen, to share the stories that are sometimes funny, sometimes uncomfortable, but they're always deeply human. They are real. They are unapologetically real, totally real. It challenges us, encourages empathy, encourages understanding and openness, while challenging the shame and the silence about being female. This is perhaps why the Vagina Monologues is something that resonates with audiences today. It reminds us that theatre can entertain still. It can challenge us. It can educate us. It can create meaningful conversations that extend far beyond the stage. And it is staged, of course, at the New Plymouth Little Theatre. This August, we start rehearsals at the end of this month. And, of course, we've got an amazing cast who you'll get to hear from over the next few weeks as we are in rehearsal. We will be talking to them about the process as we go through. But it's on stage at New Plymouth Little Theatre from the 5th to the 15th of August, and tickets will be going on sale very shortly for a short season. It's a limited season, but definitely if you want to get to see it, make sure you book your tickets quick because it can't be extended. It's a very short season of the Vagina Monologues. Hey, all the best to everybody, of course, for the different shows around. We've got Around the World in 80 Days is going to be performed shortly up at New Plymouth Rep. There's oodles of shows on as well too. The Shakespeare one with the theatre company, semi-professional theatre company, is being performed at New Plymouth Little Theatre as well this week. So good luck to them. Have a great season, guys. And, yeah, we'll catch you next week, next Monday night here on the Stage Door. Have a great week and get out and see some theatre. Don't forget also book your tickets for not only the 100 with New Plymouth Operatic, but also go and book your tickets for Sister Act the Musical because that opens on the 25th of June, which is not far away at New Plymouth Little Theatre. We look forward to that. Have yourself a great day. Thanks again to BC Media for all of your support and we'll see you next Monday night here at the Stage Door.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information and others just like this, head along to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.